Thank you. Good morning. My name is George Cook. This is my second opportunity to be here with you at First Baptist Church. I will share that I've had two occupations during my life. First as a teacher at Whittier and then Culler Junior High Schools here in Lincoln. Then bivocational for a time, also working in ministry. And by the way, at Culler, I had Mrs. Singleton's two children, Stephen in 1982, 1983, and Jana 84 to 85. So it's been a while, but I still remember them very fondly. And then as a full-time pastor, starting in 1993 and going through retirement in the fall of 2020. Upon retirement, I still do have ministry opportunities, including being here today. And for today, I have a couple of sports stories for you. The first one about a man named Chris Couch. In 1989, when Chris was 16 years old, he was first recognized as being a very good golfer. From 1992 until 1995, he competed for the University of Florida on that school's golf team. He was very successful in college. Because of his skill and his young age, he was quickly declared to be the next golfing prodigy. A surefire success for years to come was the prediction. Right out of college, Chris earned his PGA Tour card. His reputation provided lots of hope for a brilliant career. However, twice over the next few years, he lost his tour card due to lack of prize winnings. Each time, Chris made it back to the PGA level. Then in 2006, at the age of 32, not 16 or 20 or 28 or 30, at age 32, 16 years after such wonderful things were said about him, he finally won his first PGA tournament. He won after sinking a 55-foot chip shot on the 18th hole during the final round of the Zurich Classic in New Orleans. That miracle shot gave him a one-stroke victory. Between the early accolades and his first win, and by the way, that was his only win on the PGA golf career, between the accolades and the victory, do you suppose Chris was ever tempted to quit? No doubt that happened. However, Chris persevered. He kept working and working and learning and practicing and doing. He kept at it year after year after year until finally he won a tournament. Finally, his persistence paid off. Chris Couch did, in a physical sense, what we are to do spiritually, which is to keep working and working, learning, practicing, and doing, letting nothing deter us from continuing to grow and develop. Which brings us to the first of a few Bible references for today's message. This one, part of one verse. The last part of verse 1 of chapter 12 of the New Testament book of Hebrews. Please say it with me. Let us lay aside every weight and sin which clings so closely, and let us run with perseverance the race that is set before us. There are several key words and phrases in that part of verse 1. For instance, there is the word race. What kind of race? As Chris Couch learned, a marathon race. His was not a quick dash, and I might mention that in my only attempt at making any kind of sports team in high school, my event was for the track team, the 100-yard dash. I did not make the team. I was a few tenths of a second too slow for that, but the long races, wow. I did not have the strength for them. I was a short distance runner. I hope I am doing better spiritually. I hope I do have the strength to run a spiritual marathon. That is the kind of race we are called to as Christians. About that, here is something I read. Again, I was never a long-distance runner, so I do not know this personally. This is what I read. In a marathon, there are a few stages. In the beginning, there is anticipation, excitement, an eagerness to get started. Adrenaline and energy are high. Then there is the routine. A pace is set. Things proceed as expected. Experience, skill, and training prevail. Along the way, though, there might be some struggles, what runners, I understand, call hitting the wall. It is at such times there might be an urge to quit. Only determination and discipline can carry a runner through those times. Those stages also come in the spiritual race, the excitement of being a new believer in Jesus, then the routine of the Christian life, including prayer and Bible study. But life itself can make it difficult to keep running. There may indeed come times of spiritual fatigue. But fortunately, in a race, there is the finish line, the moment when the goal is within sight and grasp. That time should have with it a special joy of knowing the end is near, the satisfaction of knowing the reward is just ahead. The Christian life, according to Hebrews 12, is a race we want to finish for blessings now and the wonder of heaven later. Therefore, verse 1 adds, we are to lay aside every weight that might slow us down. To what kind of weight is the writer of Hebrews referring? What kind of weights? How about these that indeed can slow us down or discourage our working and working and learning and practicing and our doing? How about habits? Any habits that take our attention away from thinking about spiritual things. How about associations with people who do not encourage us to stay in the race? How about various pleasures the world offers, many of which are not inherently bad, but if they become the center of our attention, they can take our attention off the Lord, thereby slowing us down in the areas of worship, study, prayer, fellowship, all of those things slowing us down in our marathon race. You can come up with other things that might slow you down. Those things too are to be laid aside, which means literally to take them off, put them down, walk away from them, leaving them behind. Let us lay aside every weight that might slow us down. We must also lay aside sin. Take off, put down, walk away from, leave behind every sin. Sin. There are different definitions of that word. For our purposes, suffice it to say, sin is anything that is offensive to God, any violation of His law, law that teaches us how to treat God and others and ourselves. What are some sins? Again, you can come up with others, but here are some that come to my mind. Against God, how about not taking time to learn about Him and worship Him and fellowship with His people? Against others, how about cheating them in business or gossiping about them or not helping them physically or spiritually? Against yourself, how about not getting enough rest, not getting enough exercise, maybe eating too much? There are many examples of sin that could be mentioned. But whatever sins we come up with in our minds, each one is to be laid aside. That is because any and all of them slow us down on our spiritual marathon race, sometimes to the point of causing us to want to quit the race altogether. We must not quit, even when it might be easy to do so. So, like Chris Couch did with golf, We are to keep working and working spiritually, learning, practicing, doing. As verse 1 continues, we are to run with perseverance the race that is set before us. The idea of perseverance, of continuing on and on and on until the finish line, leads us to the second sports story for this message. This one about a swimmer named Florence Chadwick. Florence was in the early 1950s a world-known, accomplished, long-distance swimmer. One example of that was her swimming across the Bosphorus Strait in Turkey, 4 miles across. The Strait of Gibraltar, between Spain and Europe and Morocco in Africa, which is 14 miles long. The English Channel between England and France. She did that twice, once each direction. The channel is 21 miles across. And the Dardanelles, also in Turkey, that strait is 28 miles across. In 1952, Florence Chadwick decided to attempt a swim from the coast of California to Catalina Island, a distance the same as English Channel, 21 miles. Florence had already had success at long-distance swimming. Leading up to her coast to Catalina Island attempt, she trained hard. Then on July 4th, 1952, she began her swim. As mentioned earlier, concerning especially a marathon race, Florence started out with great energy and excitement. The icy cold water was uncomfortable, but at first it was just a nuisance. However, before long, fog set in. Fog so thick, Florence could just barely see the support boats beside her. Not long after that, jellyfish became a problem. Their stings were very uncomfortable. At times, sharks had to be driven away. Those in the boats did that with rifles. Florence experienced many problems, but she kept swimming, doing so hour after hour, until finally she begged to stop and be pulled onto one of the boats with her. Her mother, who was also her trainer, was in one of the support boats beside her. Her mother encouraged Florence to keep going. "You're almost there," she said. "Do not give up now." That worked for a while. But eventually, a few minutes short of 16 hours after she began her swim, Florence gave up. She was pulled onto one of the support boats. The race was over. I'm not making fun of Florence Chadwick. I do not swim at all, so I cannot even think of such a feat, let alone trying even to wade one lap of a swimming pool, especially in the deep water. But you know what makes the story sad? It is that as Florence dried off and started to get warm, the fog began to lift. It was then she noticed Catalina Island, her destination, was less than a quarter mile away. The waves would have completed the race for her if only she had not given up. What did Florence say? She told reporters it was not the sharks, the jellyfish, the fatigue, the cold water that defeated her. She had been defeated by the fog. "If I could have seen the land for myself," she said, "I would have made it." By the way, there is some good news. 2 months later, Florence made another attempt to swim to Catalina Island. That time, the water was still ice cold. The sea was still inhabited by jellyfish that stung her and sharks that had to be repelled. Fog was once again hindering her view, but that time she pressed on, believing that somewhere beyond the fog, her goal would be reached. This time, she was successful. Someone else kept his focus on the prize and kept working and working and learning and practicing and doing his Christian race. That one was the Apostle Paul, who many times expressed his intent to keep running. Let's think about two such times. First, listen to the first part of 1 Corinthians 9:27. I pummel my body and subdue it. That speaks of training. Just like Chris Couch did in golf, just like Florence Chadwick did in swimming, Paul trained hard, working at laying aside anything, every weight, every sin that might interfere with him running his Christian race with perseverance. Second, he worded it this way in Philippians 3, 13 and 14. I strain forward to what lies ahead. I press on toward the goal for that prize. What prize? The upward call of God in Christ Jesus. The call to righteous living here and now. The call to heaven, which is a reward for those whose relationship with Jesus endures to the end of the Christian race. How did Paul do that? How can we keep working and working and learning and practicing and doing in our Christian race? Back to Hebrews 12. This time the first part of verse 2. Look to Jesus. Another translation has it, let us fix our eyes on Jesus. Just as many people in Hebrews 11 did. There are many, many people listed in Hebrews 11. People known as heroes of the faith. We are not going to talk about all of them. It would take much more time than we have in this message. But let's consider a few of them, thinking about how they persevered. I have picked out just a few. Many were Old Testament people, so they did not know Jesus specifically, but remember that God and Jesus are one. Noah. Remember, he is the one who built the ark. So he and his family and a few of each kind of animal on the earth could survive a great flood God planned. It took years and years and years for the ark to be built. Years and years and years where it had not yet rained, which means nobody knew what a flood was. And Noah lived far away from any big body of water. Noah was ridiculed by his neighbors who refused to listen to Noah's pleas for them to change their ways and listen to and obey God. Noah had a long, unappreciated race, but he never gave up. He kept building and building, then gathering his family and the animals until the day the flood started. He kept going until his race was over. Abraham is listed in Hebrews 11. He was the one called by God to leave his homeland and his extended family and travel to a new land that God would show him when he got there. That had to have been difficult, but Abraham laid aside any weight that would slow him down. Abraham kept running his marathon, eventually seeing what would later become the Promised Land. Moses. Though a Jew, he was raised in the court of the Pharaoh of Egypt. In that place, he had many luxuries and privileges. However, he chose to follow God's direction to lead God's people out of slavery in Egypt. That was the race God had for Moses to run. And yes, there were troubled times, both before and after the escape from Egypt. Times when Moses was criticized and threatened. Those were weights he felt, but he kept going. Rahab is another one listed in Hebrews 11. She was a resident of Jericho, which was to be the first city in the Promised Land to be taken by God's people. Rahab was from an enemy city, so working to help the people of God was a serious risk to her from the other residents of Jericho. Plus, it appears, she was the leader of an immoral lifestyle of a prostitute. So there was a risk the people of God would not accept her help. But Rahab did help. Her help was important in the people of God defeating Jericho. The fact she kept running her race was very important. Those people and the others listed in chapter 11, all of them, according to the writer of Hebrews, surround us. And I need to add, There were some of those others who always impressed me. After naming the heroes of the faith, names we recognize from the Bible, the writer lists other sufferings: torture, mocking, scourging, prison, being stoned, sawn in two, killed with swords, having to go around in skins of animals, wandering over deserts and mountains, having to live in caves, all of that, rather than giving up their faith, sometimes in God, sometimes in Jesus. What impresses me about that list is no names are given for any of those sufferings, which means those who suffered those things decided to stand in their faith, not to make names for themselves, but because they knew that when they completed their spiritual race, they would, as it is worded in verse 35, rise to a better life. Their finish line was heaven. Yes, all the people in Hebrews 11, those named and those not named, all those people, as Hebrews 11 promises, surround us. They surround us for the purpose of encouraging us. Just like Chris Couch had coaches and supporters, just like Florence Chadwick had people in boats traveling with her to encourage her, so do we have people encouraging us. So Hebrews 12:1, again, please say it with me, let us lay aside every weight and sin which clings so closely, and let us run with perseverance the race that is set before us. Let's do that. As Paul wrote, let's pummel and subdue our bodies. Let's us press on toward the goal so that we can and will receive the prize. Not a golf win, not an island beach, but blessings now and heaven later. What a wonderful prize that is. There is a hymn that has come to my mind, Spirit of God, descend upon my heart. I would like to share the words of verses 1 and 4. I've changed the last part of verse 4 a bit, but may this serve as a prayer for the Holy Spirit's help for us to keep working and working and learning and practicing and doing our Christian faith. Verse 1, Spirit of God, please descend upon my heart. Wean my heart from earth, and through all my heart's pulses move. Please stoop to my weakness, mighty as you art, and make me love you as I ought to love. Verse 4, Spirit of God, teach me to feel that you are always near. Teach me the struggles of my soul to bear. Help me to check any rising doubt, any temptation to rebel against you. Teach me the wonders of my answered prayer. Amen.